A missing person is a person who has vanished and is unconfirmed as alive or dead, as their location and fate are unknown.
Hey everyone, welcome back to Down the Rabbit Holes podcast. I'm Melissa.
And I'm Amy.
Go ahead.
We're looking at each other like, you take it away. No, you take it away. But I've got a case here that I came across because it showed up on my Facebook timeline. Because I follow the Center for Missing and Exploited Children and a couple of other missing persons focused websites or whatever that pop up on my Facebook. And to be honest with you, I don't know what caught my attention. I just saw missing, and I think it was the age partially, because I'm like, oh, she's been missing for a long time. And I guess as you and I do, those cases are really intriguing.
Yes.
Anyway, I'm going to jump right in. As 99% of these are, 100%, it's frustrating. So you'll find out why.
Yes.
Today I'm going to tell you about Susan Swedell. Susan Swedell was born in Minnesota. She was born on February 13th of 1968. And at the time of her disappearance, was living in Lake Elmo, Minnesota, with her 16-year-old sister Christine and her mother. Susan's parents were divorced, and there isn't a lot of details around it. I don't know how little. I don't even know if it's significant. It's just, you know, when you hear that she lived with her mother and her sister, you're kind of like, oh, where's dad? Well, he's not there because they're divorced. Susan was described as kind, funny. She's sociable, and she's perhaps inexperienced, as you'd suspect, like an older teenager to be in life. A lot of places use the word naive, and I don't know what it is about it, but I don't always love using the word naive because I don't want anyone to think someone's unintelligent or something. She just wasn't experienced. Nevertheless, she was really responsible. So she's active in church and she works, and it doesn't sound like she's getting into any trouble. She has close relationships with her family. You know, all around, nothing much going on there. Susan graduated from Stillwater High School and went off to college at the University of Wisconsin, where it appears as though she majored in psychology. It seemed like she completed her freshman year, but she struggled to be away from home and her family. And, you know, that's an assumption on my part. I don't know if she went for a few weeks. I don't know if she went for a semester or she successfully got through the year. It doesn't make too much of a difference other than I'm saying that, and I don't want anyone to assume that that's facts. So she really wanted to be close to her mom and her sister, and she decided to return home. And I can relate. I did the same thing midway through sophomore year. So I can understand, you know, nothing was going wrong in school per se, but I was like,
no, you had the best roommate ever.
So, seriously, that's a whole other story for a different day, different podcast. So when she did return home, she did what a responsible young adult would do and gained employment. She got a job at Kmart. I'm sure everyone knows where Kmart is, right? Like every USA had Kmart everywhere, right? It's like an 80s Target, Caldor.
Yes. Yes.
All of those things. And it appeared to have, and she appeared to have good work ethic. Nothing anywhere that says that she's a terrible worker. She's late. She misses whatever. She's going to work and she's doing what she needs to do to support herself. It seems like it wasn't too far away from her home, maybe like a town over, and she was able to transport herself. She had a vehicle. Don't know if it was her mother's or something that she was sharing, but it sounds like she had access to this vehicle, no problem. The Kmart was located probably, it says like a shopping mall, but I kind of imagine like a dense area of the city or town where there's just a lot of department stores and things like that. Maybe there's strip malls. But that's kind of what I'm envisioning here. Kind of populated. On January 19th of 1988, at this point, Susan is 19 years old. She went off to work at Kmart as usual. On this day, a blizzard was rolling in. This is not unusual for Minnesota. I mean, truthfully, I've passed through the northern states, but it's pretty fair knowledge, I suppose, that they're northern. They're used to the weather off the Great Lakes. Like, they're the places that you're going to get, like, feet of snow.
Yes.
And they're used to it. But that didn't mean Susan loved driving in it. So she's like, I expect this, whatever, but I'm not signing up to do it if I don't have to. And I get that. She called her mom mid-shift, and she updated her. She said to her mom, I'll be home right after work. That's my plan. Between Susan, Christine, and their mom, they decided to kind of hunker down for the evening with some snacks and watch some movies for the night. So not only did she say she'd be home, it sounds like they actually discussed a real plan. At 9 p.m., Susan gets ready to leave, so she's off work at this point. Coworkers noted that Susan changed from her red uniform into an unseasonal skirt without a jacket. I believe her supervisor even made some comment to her, but Susan kind of just like shrugged it off. Whatever. Susan was seen by other employees cleaning off her car and warming it up for a few minutes before leaving. What we know happened next is along Susan's drive, she had car trouble. Sounds to me like it's overheating. Well, actually, I know that it's overheating based on later information, so I know that happened. Susan stopped at a gas station along her route. While at the gas station, she pulls in, she parks, and she is seen by the gas station attendant who was interviewed later. He mentioned that pretty immediately a dirty-looking car followed Susan's car in and was seen talking to her. The attendant assumed they knew each other because, I guess, like, he came in so fast and they immediately started talking. Like, they seemed familiar. So, quick assumption, whatever.
And does he know she's having car trouble? Because then you could even assume, like...
Well, he does, based on what happens next. Because she goes in and she says, I'm having car trouble. Do you mind if I leave my car here overnight? And I'll essentially deal with it tomorrow or whatever. Of course, says, no problem, fine. You just need to park your car over there, make sure that the plows can get through or whatever. And she does just that. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, so he probably just thinks that she somehow was like, hey, this person needs to pick me up.
Maybe. I mean, she didn't say anything about anyone picking her up to the attendant.
But you don't, you see what I'm saying, right? Like,
that's the assumption, right?
Yes.
I mean, I'm trying to think back to me reading the article, and that's probably what I would have assumed early on in the first place. Yes. So the attendant watches her park the car and get into the car with this guy who he was able to give a description later. He had, like, curly hair. He was kind of rugged looking, maybe skinny. And that was it. It's around 11 o'clock that night. Susan's mom is pretty distressed. Like, her daughter, don't know how far from work she was. But I imagine within an hour after knowing your kid's getting off shift, because there's no way she's driving an hour to go to her standard job. You know, I'd say 15 minutes to 30 at the most. So 10 o'clock, she's probably worrying. And she did. She's like, did my daughter get in an accident? Like, that's what I would initially think. My kid's driving in a snowstorm. So she did what anyone would do, and she called the police. They were initially really great, or at least the responding officer was. He was like, no problem, your daughter's missing. Mom gave the route that she would take from work to home. And he followed that route, and he was actually able to see her car parked at the gas station. Great news, right? Well, not quite, because the gas station's closed, and at that point, he can't really talk to the attendant, right? Attendant's not there.
Shoot.
So
yep.
He drives the route on the way home, doesn't see any sign of her. And apparently he does that several times throughout the evening, even in the snowstorm. So great. Awesome. However, again, he doesn't see anything that would give him any reason to think Susan was out in the snow or whatever. So the officers, you know, kind of not backed off, but, you know, they did their search. They did their due diligence. And they continued to follow up the next day when the gas station was open, and they found the attendant that was on shift the night that Susan stopped in. That was when the attendant was able to tell the story and confirm that Susan actually had arrived. She was having car trouble and gave the description and the details about her getting in a car and leaving. This quickly turned into, right at that point, she left voluntarily.
Yeah,
she ran away. I'm sure she'll be back in a few weeks because she got in a car with someone she appeared to know. I don't know how much or what mom said or did about this, but I imagine, you know, mom saying, you know, we talked, we had a plan, like she was supposed to go home, like this doesn't make any sense. You know, she's a social girl to a degree, but I think mom was probably feeling like this doesn't add up. But it doesn't really sound like she's getting a lot from police and able to, for them to be able to help her.
No, but I see where this is going.
Yeah, I mean, pretty much. We know the first 48 matters, and even though they didn't probably talk about the first 48 back in the 80s quite the way that they do today, we know we're losing time.
Right.
So a few days later, Susan's mom, or pretty immediately after, I don't want to say a few days later, I think she originally drove the car home. And then she was like, I'm going to drive the car to the mechanic. She noticed pretty immediately the same thing that Susan probably experienced, overheating. Now, I just want to rewind for a second and just make note of the fact that Susan's license, purse, and her glasses, which she apparently needed, were left in the car. And as you probably, you true crimers, probably know, like, wow, Susan's mom got in the car. That really sucks because what did we lose? Perhaps, maybe, evidence.
Evidence, yeah.
Maybe not, but obviously you want to take every opportunity as an investigator right. to do that. So that happened. No fault of mom's. How could she have ever known? Absolutely. She's just trying to make sure that the car is taken care of. So she brings it to the shop, like I said. And they quickly realized what was going on. And this is the part that really kind of freaks me out, is the shop reported to mom that, never heard of this part, the petcock had been loosened. So apparently that is kind of like the screw that holds in the water for the radiator, I think. The mechanic seemed pretty confident and experienced in recognizing something like that. And, you know, at that point it made sense why the car overheated, because there was no water in the radiator to cool it down. So there you have that. What did mom do? She immediately goes to the police and she reports exactly what the mechanic said. This does prompt them to reconsider the running away. But, you know, they really didn't have a whole lot of evidence to go on. They have a police sketch and a rough description of the vehicle. But, you know, there's no idea who she could have been talking to or could have taken off with. She had been hanging out with her ex-boyfriend, but that doesn't fit any description. And in fact, she was originally supposed to hang out with him that night, but he had called to cancel because of the weather. So very shortly after Susan disappeared, Christine and mom also discovered another bizarre scenario. When they came home one day, their spare house key had been moved. They found it, but it was in a different location. And when they went in the house, it smelled like smoke. One article said definitely marijuana. There were dirty dishes in the sink, which they swear they did not leave there. And Susan's work pants, the red work pants that she wore to Kmart that she changed out of before leaving, were found crumpled under her bed.
How do we know they're the same work pants?
Well, let's get into questions later.
Okay.
There was nothing actually missing. So police know this. It doesn't sound like they did any investigation in regards to this, which was very troubling to the family. And essentially nothing happened after this. In 2006, which is not quite 20 years or anything since her disappearance, there was some activity on Susan's Social Security number. It was found out that it was a scam. Like someone was just trying to use her Social Security information to gain, I don't know if it was, it doesn't matter what it was. That's what they were trying to do. And that was it. What they did discover initially after the investigation through interviewing and talking to people was that Susan was talking to someone apparently by the name of Dale, who had been calling work, but no one knows his relationship with her. No one knows how they knew each other, and no one knew a guy named Dale personally. So what do you do with that? I'm not really sure. Also, Susan had been using phone chat services. So this is 1988 equivalent to a 2000s kid using chat rooms online.
Got it.
She's talking to numerous young men, is what it sounds like. At one point, she racked up a bill of close to $300, which I wanted to check what the equivalency of that is currently, and that's about $752 today, which I'm glad I did because that gave me a lot of perspective. That's a lot of money to be spending on phone chatting services. So that's the information that they gathered after her disappearance, but it led to nowhere. We're 30 years post her disappearance, and that is the information that we have left. So theories. There aren't too many. Nothing is died by suicide. I haven't checked the Reddit, but there's no article that I read. There's nothing on YouTube that even remotely mentioned died by suicide. But there is running away. So that is one theory. Another theory is that she had been talking to someone. Maybe someone that she had been talking to for a while, and they had something to do with her disappearance. Or maybe it was someone that she talked to and she doesn't really know them, but they had something to do with disabling her car and kind of cornering her in a situation where she had very limited choices or, you know, the choice to get in the car with them and something sinister happened. Could she have gotten in a car with someone, got out later, and something bad happened then? Maybe. And I think at this point you can start to carve out a lot of sub-theories inside these bigger theories, but that's generally, I think, what we're looking at here.
Mm-hmm. I feel like, remember the case in Georgia where the girl was missing from a house and a tapestry was missing that had no yes. value and is a weird size, and we keep saying, like, not one piece of the puzzle fits together?
Yes, 100%. Wasn't she house-sitting or something, though?
At her family's house.
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm.
It was Jenna Van Gelderen.
Gotcha. Yes, I remember completely.
But that's how I'm feeling here. So I want to go back to the beginning, right, where I say, okay, she changed for work. She changed after work that night. Then I'm like, okay, go back a little bit further. She told her mom she was coming home.
Right.
I wonder if she was planning to meet someone, but only for a short time. 30 minutes, a drink, whatever.
Sure.
And figured she would tell her mom that she was in a snowstorm.
I've heard it. I've literally heard this from my friends that young or something, but yes.
Exactly. Okay, so fine. I can buy, let's say I buy that. The next thing that happens is her car overheats, which mm-hmm. we know is likely intentional.
Yes.
So if that's the case, it's likely not the guy she was going to meet. I think it would have to be someone separate that was going to stalk her until the car broke down.
So I follow you. But the one problem I have with that is, wouldn't someone have come forward and said, hey, I was supposed to meet Susan and she never showed up?
Not if it was like a date off the chat rooms or whatever. You may not have given
That's
like...
True.
Like, I think about people that date online now, right? Like, they don't ask for last names. You just swipe and you get a first name and a phone number. And then once you're on a date, whatever. So what if it's the same way back on the phone chat things? You know you're going to meet Susan at a bar at 7. And by 7:45, she hasn't come. You're like, okay, cool.
Yeah. I mean, I have to agree that if she was going to meet someone, it was close to home and it would have been fast. Because if she changed, it was because she didn't want to hang out in her work clothes. But she was also en route home. So it seems like she was scheduled to meet someone maybe at a restaurant or something. Because maybe that person said, oh, that's on my way. I can drop you off there. It's right down the street.
Right.
Like, we'll have coffee or, you know, a quick bite or something.
Wait a second. What do you mean?
Well, I mean,
who are we talking about?
I'm talking about Susan, and she changed for a reason. Because it also was stated that's not something she usually did.
Right, so she's going to meet someone, even if it's for 30 minutes, somewhere on her route home.
But it has to be close to home because she was already en route home. Like, the cop knew where to go because mom said this would be her route home.
Right, I'm with you. Well, just because the gas station was... So, think about it like this, too. I'd have to look at the map, but when I leave work to go home, I go the same way out of work to a point. But then I'm going to go run an errand or whatever. I might divert, whatever.
Yeah, that's true.
So, what if the gas station was just like a point? He noticed the car, and then the rest of her route home may have not been on the route home.
Yeah, like she was going to hit the gas station either way.
And
like,
then she was gonna
going
to go
past it.
Exactly. And then at the next intersection, she goes left to go home, but she was going to go right.
Yes. So let's say that that happens. The guy at the gas station, yes, I understand she could be naive, but I feel like he has to sell her more than a ride. Like, it has to be, oh, I'm going to that place or I'm going right by it.
What if it doesn't happen like that? What if she actually broke down on the side of the road?
Okay.
And he pulls up behind her and goes, oh, pop your hood. She does it, and he's like, listen, let's look at radiator. Here's what we're going to do. You're going to drive to the gas station a half mile up the road, leave your car there, and I'll take you wherever you need to go.
Total speculation, but I think that sounds like a great way to build someone's trust. It's like, I didn't hurt you when I had the opportunity.
Right. Like, and he's like, oh, you know, I happen to be a mechanic, whatever the heck he sells her. And he knows what's wrong with the car, so he already is like, pop the hood, oh, it's this.
That sounds pretty likely.
Yeah, I don't think the initial approach...
Because he came in right after
Right,
her.
I don't think the initial approach happened at the gas station. I think the initial...
Okay, so...
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, like, okay, so we have that first half down, and this is what you're talking about that other case, is that then we take the second part of everything that happened, and it gets all messed up, right?
Right.
So let's take apart the second kind of part of what happened. So the car stuff, we know what happened, and we kind of have that figured out how that would fit in here. This person wanted to take advantage of her and found a way to do that. But then we have the...
But hold on. He's still got to be a stalker because it was planned.
Yes, and he could be random or he could be from a phone service. And I think that that's possible because what are the things you do when you talk to someone that you're getting to know? So maybe you're cautious.
What do you do for work?
This is what I do. This is where I work. But you're like, I'm smart. I'm not going to let them know where I live, of course, because that would be not so wise. So she probably did all that. But when they're talking about work and stuff, she's like, oh, I work at Kmart. I think it's definitely plausible that using that information, he could have done something to the vehicle in the parking lot. It's dark. It's snowy. Who would notice? There's certainly no cameras in 1988. And if there were, they're grainy at best.
But what I hate about that is, what are the odds the one night she's going to lie to her mom and go and change and meet someone is also the night someone decides to stalk her?
Yeah, I know. You're right. I have a problem with that too.
And then if they're the same person, I guess it's possible he met her at work and it's the same person and she was like, follow me to the bar or whatever. And her car overheated because he planned that. Okay. Either way, I have two scenarios in my head going through. All right, what happens next?
The other one is left her life. Ran away, however you want to phrase it.
So this is her parking. Let me just run through that really fast. That's her parking her car at the gas station to allude that she's not coming back for it and left her life with whoever.
Now that you mention that, that's not a completely perfect scenario, what we just talked about. Her getting this ride from the person who may have helped her on the side of the road. She left her purse in her car that she was leaving overnight.
If everything else can be explained away, I would say to that, it's not a world where she's carrying her cell phone and her debit cards. She may have had literally nothing in her purse.
Okay, fair. So we can maybe write that one off as a fluke.
Maybe.
Okay. All right. Well, let me move on to the she ran away scenario. I mean, first of all, let's just say that there doesn't seem to be any conflict at home. She left college to go home to her family. So someone allegedly breaks in the house. And they don't break in because they found the key. They used it and put it back in the wrong place. And then they come in. There's dirty dishes in the sink. There's her work pants crumpled under the bed. There's smell of marijuana. And nothing taken. That whole thing right there is confusing. Not a single thing in there makes sense to me.
Did we test that they are the same pants she wore to work that day?
So I honestly don't know how there is a way to confirm this. Unless she owned just one pair of pants that she washed all the time. Possible, right? The articles that I read and the Charlie Project and a couple of YouTubes that I've listened to make it sound pretty factual, but yet I guess I do kind of struggle with someone not being able to say these are confirmed as the pants she wore to work that night.
Because if you take that out,
mm-hmm.
right, there's no other physical evidence tying her to coming back to the house. It could just be what mom and, like, and this is no fault at them. Like, they want it to be so badly that they're like, I didn't leave those dishes. I didn't leave those dishes either. You know what I mean? Like, I think to say maybe she came back here one more time is almost like one of those, like, it's not real, she's gone.
Okay, so maybe. But let's just pretend that we could find a reason that made this make sense.
Oh, nothing makes sense. Nothing makes sense.
Could she have... Yeah, I don't know, because nothing's missing. I'd say, like, if her diary was missing or her favorite shirt was missing and it was right out in the open the whole time. But I can see the pants as being something to throw people off, but I can't make anything else make sense. Why are you going to sit down, have a meal, and smoke some pot and leave?
And that's why part of me wonders if that's, again, it's not a slight to them in any way, shape, or form. Your mind can play tricks on you. And if that was them wanting her to be there so bad.
Again, definitely possible. I mean, I struggle a little bit with the weed, but yeah. If she did want to leave her life, she's certainly making it look like she did by leaving her pants. So that would mean if she left her life, she would want people to know it and not think that she was kidnapped or abducted, which is the same thing, sorry, obviously.
Or she didn't think anyone would notice that she came by the house.
Okay, possible. But what would she have come by the house for if she didn't take anything?
And
to leave the pants?
But hold on. If she came by the house, wouldn't she have had her own key?
Not if she left her purse.
Okay.
And keys in the car.
Okay.
I mean, she could have come by with other people to leave the pants because they wanted the pants to be found. And then...
It's like one of those things, like I said about the other case. It's you when you explain away one fact, you're like, okay, I got it.
Mm-hmm.
And then you suddenly have explained away seven facts, and you're like, these all can't be explained away.
Right. So that is where I get super stuck, and I just don't know.
Okay, you know when you make decision trees, and it's like yes, no, and then off the yes, no, you ask another question, and it's like yes, no, whatever?
Yes.
Okay, so... The first question is, did someone meet her at work and was going to follow her somewhere for a drink? Or did she change with the intention of meeting someone when she left work? So with that question, because here's the thing. If someone met her there,
mm-hmm.
they got there intending on harming her and fiddled with her radiator knowing it would break down.
Mm-hmm.
Or it's someone she was going to meet, which means there has to be someone else that fiddled with her radiator and intentionally made her break down.
Which that one is the hard one for you to swallow, right? Because that would mean two people had it out to harm her that night? Well,
no. Because the first guy was just kind of going to go on a date with her.
But what you were saying was that what are the odds that she would be just not completely forthcoming with her mom and run into danger?
And have a snowstorm.
Right.
Well, I just think that it's, if it was a person, a second person, right? Like, yes, this first guy, she's lying about meeting, whatever, fine. She's just came home from college and probably isn't used to having to tell her mom about meeting guys.
Okay.
So, fine, whatever. But that means the second guy, why her? Like, he just picks a random Kmart parking lot and picks a random car he can unscrew the piece to?
No, I have to believe that it's more likely to me that this is someone she had talked to casually, who knew where she worked, and knows that probably she'd be really uncomfortable breaking down in a snowstorm. It would be easily swayed to get in a car.
So then maybe he still does approach her on the street, though.
Maybe.
Like, he follows her, right? Because yeah. He... And then he pulls up and he was like... And he's like, oh my gosh, it's you. And she's like, oh my god, my car just broke down. And he's like, oh, jump in with me, no big deal.
Wow, that would be something, huh? But then it's almost like when you get to the gas station, doesn't it seem like a much more reasonable thing to do to be like, okay, like, I'm sure the attendant's going to let me use the phone and call my mom for a ride.
Not if you went on a couple dates with him.
Yeah, maybe.
And I mean, if he's comfortable driving in a snowstorm, you may not want your mom to come out.
Yeah. At the end of the day, like, it's hard to, like, really iron out a timeline and how this happened. But it sounds like you and I are on the same page that it's probably foul play.
Yes, but and in order for that to happen, I have to discard the fact that she went by her house.
Okay, if they are her pants from work, then I don't know how to explain that.
If it's tested somehow and we know it's those pants that she wore that day, she left on her own accord.
To complete that, that's crazy to me how one detail can shift the whole thing.
Well, because why else would she go home?
I know.
And if she could go home with her captor, there's a lot of different ways to make it so they know you're looking for help.
Agreed. All right, you want to open it up?
I mean, no, I want to go down every single rabbit hole again, but yes.
All right, then. Let's open it up, guys. What do you think? Do you think this is foul play? Do you think she left her life? And we're seeing eye to eye all that much about the scenario of the potential break-in or walk-in at home. What do you think about that? And is it related? Is it plausible that this is just a family that is desperate for any answers? What do you think?
And I want to say it for a third time, just because if that's where they end up, I do not fault them for missing their loved one so bad.
Absolutely. I would be that person looking for any shred of hope that my child or loved one is just fine.
Yes. All right, guys. And with that, we'll be back next week with a whole new case.
Okay. Thanks.
Bye.
For more information about this case and other cases we've covered, visit our website at www.downtherabbitholespodcast.com.
Follow us and interact with us on social media. On Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, we are Down the Rabbit Holes Podcast. You can also reach out to us via email at theories@downtherabbitholespodcast.com.
Down the Rabbit Holes Podcast is a 2002 production written, hosted, and developed by Amy Lamar and Melissa Benitez. Music by Kevin Wyman.
Audio production by Caitlin Reynolds.